Hi, I'm Lisa Davis. Welcome to It's Your Health on Thinking Out Loud on WUML 91.5 FM. Now, I'm sure we've all spent time in a hospital, but some have spent more time than others. And joining us today is Michael Weiss, and he is the author of the wonderful book, Confessions of a Professional Hospital Patient, a humorous first-person account of how to survive a hospital stay and escape with your life, dignity, and sense of humor. Michael, welcome to It's Your Health on Thinking Out Loud on WUML 91.5 FM.
Well, thank you for inviting me, and it does sound like a mouthful, but the hospital patient experience is it's a variety of emotions and experiences, so it's pretty hard to codify in just one book.
Yeah, well, your book is incredible. I mean, it's funny, it's warm, it's hard to read at times. It's everything. And I just
hard to read, are you saying because of what I've been through? Or,
yes, emotionally, I felt really badly for some of the things that you had gone through, and especially some of the doctors that you had to deal with, which we'll get to. And not that all, I always say this on my show that, you know, not all doctors are arrogant, but as we know, there are some out there that can be challenging.
So, well, I just want to say one thing about that so people don't get the wrong idea. I mean, certainly, this is not one of those hospitals are bad, doctors are bad.
Oh, no, not at all. That was my stuff.
Yeah, I mean, because we all have that. I compliment good doctors, and I definitely tell you who the bad ones are, and we'll get into that, but, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, one of the things that you wrote is, quote, there are certain unique experiences in life that can only be accurately described with those who experience them. And you were hospitalized approximately 50 times for a wide range of ailments, and you write that with both successful and unsuccessful medical outcomes, and that you were familiar with the bureaucratic chaos, the emotional frustrations, everything that went on in the hospital. If you can just tell us what got you in the hospital in the first place.
Sure. At approximately the age of 21, I was diagnosed with a chronic illness called Crohn's disease. It's spelled Crohn's disease. It's an incurable autoimmune illness, pretty much affecting the intestines, but it sort of can go down the entire digestive tract. It could affect your eyes, you know, et cetera, and affects your joints. It's a pretty serious illness, and in my youth, it really just affected my stomach, which I call my stomach, but let's say my intestines. So what would happen is I would get medication, and hopefully that would work, but sometimes I would get, inflammation in my intestines, which would be caused by the Crohn's disease. And if you think of it like a garden hose, when there's inflammation, it creates the a narrower passageway. So whatever, you know, whether it's food or gas or the body's just natural peristalsis to pass things through, it becomes narrower. So it's more painful. And then sometimes you'll get a kink in the garden hose, so your intestines will kink. And then you could be looking at a situation where you have what's called an obstruction. An obstruction is when the food or gas can't pass through because there's so much inflammation. And the doctors try to rectify it with medication or other types of treatment, but ultimately they operate. And they also don't like to operate because Crohn's disease has a very nasty habit of coming back very quickly. So it's a sort of like the medication and the treatment is often worse than the illness itself. It's a very difficult illness to handle, particularly for children and their parents.
Now, how are you doing right now?
I would say men's amends. I mean, I had a couple of surgeries a couple of years ago, and actually that figure about me being hospitalized 50 times, it's actually more like over 100 times. I'm 47 now. So, you know, and from surgery, you get sometimes scar tissue or what they call adhesions, and it's sort of like surgery begets more surgery. There's really nothing to do. So I'm sort of suffering through a period of that now where I might have to have surgery to remove adhesions, and it's a different way of life. I mean, you know, you can't live life like most people do where they make plans and go on vacation, you know, because at any moment the rug could be pulled out from underneath you.
Now, something that I really admire is your sense of humor, and there's so many things in the book where I laughed out loud, and this one cracked me up. You write, quote, much like staying over at your in-laws, this is about the hospital, obviously, the hospital stay is an experience that compromises your right of privacy, sense of dignity, emotional well-being, and forces you to share a bathroom with very strange people.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of people, unfortunately, grew up in that whole Marcus Welby and ER sort of TV kind of shows about doctors and nurses who really care. And nursing is the key to healthcare, and we can get into that later. But the reality is, the more unemotional these professionals are, the better care you will receive because they need to be distance from you. So some people look like, oh, I'm going into the hospital, everything will be great, but it's a very difficult experience, and you're wise to go into it knowing that, so that you do leave your dignity at the door and you look at it the way I just described it.
Yeah, you know, and another thing that's important is you say that the key to success as a hospital patient is preparation. And what are some important ways and things to do to prepare?
I think mentally, number one, I think you have to go into it, depending upon what you're going in for, obviously, or how long you're going in for, you have to mentally prepare for, people may wake you up at 3 o'clock in the morning to give you a sleeping pill. And
oh, my goodness.
You can't get pissed off. You sort of have to roll with it. And, you know, if you knew me at 25, I'm sure I was pissed off. But I think if you go into it knowing that people are going to pin and prick you and you're going to have to tell your story to a resident and a medical student and an intern, you sort of have to take that all into account. That's just the mental part. And then the physical part, which sounds kind of strange, and I have friends who make fun of me for putting this in my book, but pack a bag, particularly if you have a chronic illness, so that if it does act up and you have to rush to the hospital, you bring things that are familiar to you.
So I think that's really smart.
Well, yeah, thank you. And it takes a very sterile, non-personal environment and helps you personalize it, whether it's shampoo, whether it's slippers. And slippers, to me, strangely enough, are the most important thing because, I don't know, somehow separation from my body and the floor of the hospital always was important to me. I just needed that little sense of, you know, I'm not a part of this. I'm just here for a week. And, you know, and then, you know, books and other things that you need to read. But the stuff that if you lost, it would be okay, too, because in a hospital, anything could happen.
Oh, yeah. You know, you also write about what not to bring.
Well, a lot of business people think that I'll just go to the hospital and we'll just move my office there, you know, my laptop, my this, my that. And I tell you, I think hospitals would be, and I'm sure they're going to soon because it's going to be a competitive business, they're going to have computer rooms, and they're going to have rooms for children to watch videotapes and whatnot. But as a patient, you got to go there to get well. And sometimes to get well, you need to get away. And for me, when I was younger, I would push myself to the point as a business person where the hospital was the only place where I chilled out. So what not to bring are things that you don't want to lose and things that are going to cause stress.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that makes
one
a lot
last thing
of
I want to say
sense.
Is
oh,
your
sure.
medications.
Yes.
Because medications are very expensive, obviously, as we all know. And the reimbursement rates from your insurance company are different often when you get them outside the hospital or whether they're dispensed in the hospital. So if you bring your medications with you to the hospital, you should. But obviously you should give them to the nursing staff and let them dispense them. But you could save some money by doing that.
Oh, okay. You know, another important thing is discomfort. And you talked about how some doctors define discomfort, and if you can tell us about that and your experiences.
Well, I haven't looked at my book in a while because I've been busy with other things, but I can tell you this, that, well, because I've been involved with a lot of online, you know,
social media
ventures. It amazes me how people with chronic illnesses that involve pain don't know that there are pain management doctors. You know, who handle pain, whether it's narcotics, whether it's treatments, whether it's acupuncture, because whether you have cancer, God forbid, or Crohn's disease or whatever, those doctors, they don't like to prescribe medication to another specialty. Pain management is now a specialty. Doctors always say it's going to provide discomfort because they don't want to maintain a log that the FDA has to come in and look at. They just want to do what they have to do, and that's it. But if you find a good pain management specialist, I think it could help you deal with your chronic illness and your pain and have somewhat of a normal lifestyle.
Oh, that's good. I am such a baby when it comes to pain. And, you know, you mentioned earlier about respecting your nurse, and you have a whole section on that. And if you can share some of your experiences with the nurses and just
sure.
how I know how hard they work. My mother passed away from ovarian cancer, and her nurses were just incredible.
Well,
really
I like to look at nurses.
Difference.
I'm glad that she had that experience because
yes.
nurses have to have what I like to think of like a Major League Baseball closer's mentality, like Mariano Rivera of the Yankees. Like,
mm-hmm.
what I mean by that is they see the worst in people sometimes. But
oh,
then
yeah.
when they come back up from the OR, they have to be nice to these people. And amazingly, I mean, I'm sure I've said and cursed and done the worst things to the sweetest nurses, but they're always nice to me. And the other thing that's, I think, important to realize is that doctors give orders, nurses execute them. So if you're looking to covet favor with anyone in the hospital, you see your doctor for about 4 minutes a day, but you see your nurse for 8-hour shifts, you know, three times a day. So that's why I always say that nurses are the key to the whole healthcare system. They make everything happen. Doctors think they do, but they don't. Nurses do.
Yeah. You know, and speaking of doctors, you mentioned in the book that there's certain things that you should do to make sure that you're available when your doctor comes. For example, you were saying in the morning, make sure to eat breakfast, get it out of the way, because if the doctor comes by, you don't want him to say, oh, or her to say, oh, I'll come back later, because later could be really late.
Well, you learn this the hard way, and I will
yes.
explain how it happened to me. My
okay.
first surgery was at Mount Sinai Hospital in Manhattan, which is a teaching hospital, great doctors. I would wake up in the morning, and I'd be woken up to about literally 15 doctors looking at me. You know, the chief resident, the surgeon, the student, the intern. And it's very intimidating when you're laying in bed, they're looking down at you, and they start talking about all these medical terms. They're like, do you have any questions for us? And you're like, you haven't even found your glasses yet from being woken up. So what I say is, and what I've learned to do is, you know, the night before or during the day, keep a notepad, write notes, because not only is it good for you, but doctors appreciate the fact that you're helping them. You're condensing the amount of time they have to spend with you, because the way things are now with insurance, they don't have much time to spend with you. So for that reason, it's very, very important. And I guess what I'm sort of preaching here is that patients have to be much more active in their care, and that's one way they can be.
Yeah, I think that's important. My mom was always really big on – she would tape record conversations with doctors, take notes, bring
well, I'd be
home,
careful with
case.
That. I'd
oh.
be careful with that because I remember once when I was going to – I had, unfortunately, spine fusion surgery in my back.
Oh.
Which was related to my Crohn's in some weird way. But anyways, I was practicing law at the time, and I went to see the doctor who I ultimately used, not realizing I had my dictaphone in my shirt pocket because I was coming right from work. And as he was telling me what my chances for, you know, a successful surgery were, he saw the microphone. And all of a sudden, he looked at me, and his judgment of me automatically changed as if I may be some litigious kind of pain. I was like, oh, I'm so sorry. Because he ended up being the doctor I used, and he was fantastic. So be really careful with that.
Oh, that's a good point. Yeah, I think for her, it was just she would forget things, so she wouldn't remember everything he said she needed
that's
to do.
That's valid.
That.
You see, that's a really good point, because
yeah.
when you are the patient and doctors start telling you what to do, what not to do, what to eat, what not to eat.
It's overwhelming.
It is. And in that case, I would think your mom, that's a very shrewd, smart move. But in my case,
I know
and
what
anyone,
you're saying.
You want a patient advocate there with you, whether it's your daughter, but be careful with the tape recorders. Doctors are not big fans of that.
Oh, okay. No, that's good to know. And you mentioned insurance a few moments ago, and if you can talk a little bit about managed care, actually, because that seems to be
a
the way.
A little bit about managed care.
A little bit.
Well, I think the one thing that an interesting aspect of my journey has been that I'm 47. I was diagnosed at 21. So I've lived through, so far, a variety of healthcare, you know, sort of mechanisms that have been in place. And it's fascinating to see what President Obama is doing. And, you know, the bottom line is you have to COA, if, you know, cover your,
mm-hmm.
you know, everything you do, authorizations, this and that, in-network, out-of-network. And also now insurance companies, they have to become like businesses. And they're going to start enticing people with policies that look great with low deductibles. But then your in-network doctors are going to be like 20 doctors as opposed to 20,000. I mean, like, there are so many ways. It's going to become like the new business where they can really play games with you. So I guess what I'm trying to say is that don't trust them. They're a business, and ironically, I think they make like 28% of every transaction, yet they don't provide any service.
Oh, my goodness.
They represent the patient. They represent the doctor. So they're like the middlemen, and I give them credit. They took the risk, and they. But it's kind of hard to deal with someone when they don't have any stake in the game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, on a totally unrelated, well, still in the hospital, but unrelated from that is visitors. And you have some really good tips on visitors, because I would
always think,
oh, you should come anytime. But no, that's really not good.
Well, I write about a lot in my book because for me, my friends. Some family members, but my friends have been the key to my existence. And visiting me in the hospital is something that it's great when people come. But if, let's say, you're a Crohn's disease patient, after you have surgery, it involves a lot of bathroom activity to see if the pipes work. My friends know that's probably not a good time to come because, you know, I don't want to be embarrassed. So they sort of understand when to come. Then there are people who don't come and say, I just didn't know what to do. It's just interesting as the patient laying back there and seeing what people do. I mean, for me, if it was someone I loved, it wouldn't matter to me if I didn't know what to do. I know that they would want me there. So my advice to people is, be a friend. I mean, make the person feel as normal as possible, because every time I've been in the hospital, it's a depressing experience. So you just want to be made to feel like you're at home watching a ball game with your buddy, if that's who comes over.
Mm-hmm.
So just try, I guess what I preach is try to normalize the situation as best you can, so that it doesn't sort of stand out as, oh, my God, I'm hospitalized again. Because, listen, take it from someone who's been hospitalized as many times as me. If you look at it that way, it's hard to get through life.
Yeah, it really is. And, you know, you bring up the importance of avoiding self-pity. And I'm sure at first it was very challenging.
Actually not.
Really?
Yeah, because I get it. Maybe it's the kind of person I am. I never saw the point to sitting down and saying, why me? Or, you know, because to me, and I'm not trying to be stoic, because I cry, I get depressed, don't get me wrong. But that's more from frustration about not being able to move forward. So my advice to people is to make short-term goals, you know, particularly if you have a chronic illness. Just try to win that day. You know, and then if you do good things, hopefully things will work out. But what keeps happening to me, I feel like I get kicked in the teeth and I get pushed back. But it's a reality. It's like it's not something I can change. So I have to make the best of it. Because if I don't, it becomes, you know, it puts up friction. It makes the experience so much harder. And I don't want to be that person who my friends just, you know, their eyes roll when they think of me calling them. Like, oh, he's going to be complaining about life. I don't want to be that guy. I want to hear about their kids. I want to, just because my life is very tough at times, it doesn't mean my friends are. And I think it's a good friend. You have to do that.
You're just awesome. Your friends must just love you. I mean, you could just tell from talking to you that you're such a nice person.
Well, thank you.
Smart, funny, and you know.
I'd like to say that, I have learned that the currency of life is friendship. And without my illness, I would not have learned that. Because the benefit of having Crohn's disease in a strange way is that on a day-to-day basis, I get to see the best in everybody. Or not, but let's just try to focus on the positive. And if I didn't have the illness, I never would have looked this deep or learned how to be such a good friend. So friendships are the currency of life. So, yeah, you may be talking to the wealthiest person in the world if that were true, but really American Express doesn't really care, so it doesn't matter.
You know, you also talk in the book about there being two types of roommates, and roommates can be tough, I think, if you're depending on your personality. Like, I'm a total people person, so I think I would want a roommate. But then again, it depends on how you're feeling. How are those experiences for you with that roommate?
Boy, it's ranged from the ridiculous to the sublime. I mean, I think the first time I was hospitalized, there was it was like the curtain, so I couldn't really see who it was. But my dad was with me, and it was someone who couldn't speak English, and they weren't helping him, and he thought he had come in for something and came out for something. He just left the hospital and put on his clothes like he had major surgery. Like, it was the strangest thing in the world, you know. And then I've had other instances which, are really poignant, where you hear a doctor come in and, you know, you've heard, I'm not eavesdropping, but I hear the husband and wife talk about this blood cancer. And then, you know, you hear the doctor come in saying, you know, you have 3 months to live. I mean, I cry. It's like, what are you going to do? So when I say that's the extreme, but the more norm is in between, I that's the key to the experience. You have to be ready for whatever happens. I mean, a story I tell in the book, which really epitomizes how the bureaucracy of the system, after one of my first surgeries where you could barely move for like 2 or 3 days, you know, they cut your whole gut open, I had a kid wake me up from the first night I slept in like a week or so, because I owed like $6.40.
I was going to bring
TV
that up.
People.
Outrageous.
Yeah, he's calling me for collections. And it's like, I had a sense of humor about it.
Oh, I would have killed the guy.
Well, I said to him, dude, if I could move my hand, I would put you through the wall right now. You're so lucky. And he laughed. But it was just, and again, I was like, it's 3 a.m. He's like, well, I got to do this job. You know, like, so there is a humor to it, but you really got to have a sense of humor, because it could be really, it could break your spirit. And it's, you know, you can't let your spirit get broken, because if it is, then it's game over.
Yeah, no, that's everything in your book is so true, and it's just wonderful. And one of the things you talk about, too, is recuperating from illness, and you say, quote, recuperating from illness, surgery, and our hospital stay is difficult, especially as you get older, because your mind tends to make promises your body can't keep. Can you explain that?
Well, that's a phrase that's used a lot, and I copied it. Maybe a different way to explain it. Jimmy Buffett, the singer and writer, talks about scars as being permanent reminders of temporary feelings. And to me, that really epitomized how you got to look at it. You know, at least in the future, after you've recuperated. And while you're recuperating, yeah, you have to sort of, your brain is thinking you're 22 for the rest of your life. But as you get older, we both know that's not the case. And with recuperation, depending upon the illness, you could really set yourself back. And like with Crohn's disease, because it's an inflammatory-based illness, I've done it so many times. Like with my back surgery, my back surgeon, after many, many months, okay, Michael, you're cleared. I'm like, well, what can I do? You could play golf. Well, I did it. I came home. I went to the driving range. I hit some baseballs. I was in the hospital in like 2 hours, and the doctor called me, and he said, I said you could do all those things, but not all in the same day. Like, what's wrong with you?
It's hard not to when you get the green light. You just want to go.
Exactly, exactly. But as you get older, you realize you got to kind of like chill. But listen, I know. Listen, people are going to keep making those same mistakes, you know. So.
Yeah. Well, Michael, I tell you, your book is so wonderful.
Thank
Confessions
you.
Of a Hospital Patient. It's funny. It's moving. It's wonderful, and you have some great things about your parents and just how their support and their love. And I totally agree with you about friends. I am all about friends, and I'm just so glad you were able to come on the show. Is there anything else you want to add before we conclude?
No, just people could the book's up on, I have my own website, which
yeah,
is
give us that.
hospitalpatient.com, which is pretty easy. And if they want to follow me on Twitter, it's just Hospital Patients. It's twitter.com/hospitalpatient. I think I own the Hospital Patient domain in like a million languages. So people could always find me there, and I'll probably be writing another book soon. And I love what you do, and I think, you know, we're going to talk and hopefully look into doing something with each other, you know.
That would be great. That would be awesome. Well, Michael, I want to thank you so much. And if people want to reach me, they can go to itsyourhealthradio.org. Everyone have a great day. Keep being healthy. Take care. Bye-bye.
All right, thanks.
Are you single? I tell you, I'm married.
I am single. And
Are you Jewish? Because I'm Jewish.
I'm Jewish. I'm single.
I'm Jewish.
And people on Facebook, girls I knew from my past, always say, I can't believe you're still single. You know what,
you're
Lisa?
So
for me,
nice.
It was that... and it wasn't my illness, because a girl I dated for quite a long time said to me, you know, your illness will never be the reason, but how you handle your illness will. And that was a very wise statement from someone who otherwise not so wise, but that was a wise statement. But I just haven't found the right one. I mean, you know, my life gets very serious at times, even though I'm like a funny guy, I have great friends, but
you know, so I'm just waiting for the right one. But if you ever think of someone, sure.
Yeah, I'll let you know. Jeez Louise, yeah, you're very nice. And sense
Thank
of
you.
Humor.
Well, what's your
so
background
important.
that you got a radio show and stuff?
Well,
is something I would
can
love
I call,
to do?
Let me call you back because I'm going to get – I'm on the poll
call
system
me back,
with
yes.
the – yeah, so
okay,
the same
cool.
number, right? Okay,
yes.
I'll call you back
okay.
in a minute. Okay,
Bye.
Thanks.